out of the book of John, 5th chapter, and the 23rd verse. John 5 and 23. That all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him.
It's been a long time since I stood in front of a gracious and understanding congregation, or anybody for that matter. I spent most of my adult life in an instructor's role, most of it, but it was teaching in a manner to which to take lives and not to save them. This is a challenge. I am very humbled to be up here. And for the past year and a half, since my father-in-law was sick and I retired, I have listened to every word and tried to embrace that the best I could and understand it so I could better my life. And as individuals, when we do that, we're more hard on ourselves than we're hard on anybody. So it's input that comes back to us, whether it's bad or good, whether we're going to accept it, get better, or ignore it and get worse. And with all that being said, my own family, through studying Romans and going through 1 Corinthians and the help from Terry, God bless him and everybody in this congregation that's been so supportive, I have actually learned so much to better my life. And I've tried my best not to compromise God's Word to fit my lifestyle, but to honor it to better my life, and in turn, my family's here. And they support. And I asked my wife, she told me, I was more of a dictator in my life than anything. It was my way or the highway. That ain't a good way to be. She has a role to play, like Kyle was speaking this morning. It ain't about me. Ain't none of this about me. It's about us. As a family. As a Christian family. And then with our own family. So then that's talked about. I don't know if Kyle done this on purpose this morning. When he mentioned honor, I think he did. He may say, nah, I just kind of slipped out. There's a lot of things we get definitions out of the dictionary and we read them and we're like, what's that really mean? And when I was teaching soldiers, I asked them what the definition of honor meant. And they'd break out the Webster. And this is what it says. Faith. To an honorable moral standard higher than you are. Makes sense? Sounds good. I don't like it. As being Christians and good people, you see, what's my definition of honor?
A lifetime of self-inflicted wounds.
That's exactly what I believe it is. And as Christians, are we not subject to be inflicted with wounds that we create by honoring Christ's Word and doing what we're told to do the best we can? Are we not scrutinized for that? They can't find fault in it, but they argue about it. They curse you over it, but they can't find fault. Jesus standing in front of Pilate. Pilate says, I cannot find fault in this man. But what did Pilate do? He compromised to please the people. And Jesus suffered and died for it. A self-inflicted wound for us. It's an amazing thing. When we get to these things, I've got this off of Buck when he gave his faith. I listened. Buck mentioned that how many times a certain subject matter was mentioned in the Bible, correct? You know how many times honor is mentioned? 355 times in the Bible. By different terminologies sometimes. One most notably, says here, reverence. Having reverence. Having honor. It's mentioned. Subject matter was just read too in John. And there's four other chapters. You can go to Exodus 20:12. Hebrews 13 and 4, Romans that we covered, covers on 12 and 20. It goes on. So we have to honor what we're told to do. Most more folks from the Lord. God's law was without compromise. That's what gets us in trouble. Is compromise. When we try to compromise with our lifestyle with what God wants us to do, we start getting ourselves in trouble. Terry is talking about Romans and 1 Corinthians. We have a path that we need to follow. I call it an objective. We all got objectives in our lives that we strive to get to. We've heard it. But the Lord, He's showing us our objectives. He's giving us a laid out plan for the easiest path for us to take. What do we want to do? We want to take our own path. We want to compromise. We want to compromise with the Lord. What happens when we compromise? We put ourselves on a slippery slope. Which, once we do one compromise and we get off the path, and we compromise again, what's the Lord's voice start to do? When somebody gets far away from you, and you're hollering at them to come back to you, gets fainter, fainter, and fainter, until they're totally lost. It's crazy. I used to tell my kids when I was little, or when they were little, I'm still little, when I was staying next to Dad. I'm still 12 around Dad, so that's okay. They would say, I'd look at them, I'd say, this ain't about you, Dad, this is about me. I say, I understand that. But I say, it's almost like I just walked through a minefield, and I turn around and I'm looking at you from here to that door, and you're taking the same path that I did because I've been there before. And I'm telling you to walk 2 steps forward, 2 to the left, to keep from harming yourself. And you don't want to listen, and then bad things happen. Lord does the same thing with us. He's laid out our easiest path. And then we want to take shortcuts, and we think an easier route this way, and then we start complicating the problem. And then we start having issues. And who do we want to blame first when we start having major problems in our lives? In the front of God. God, why'd you do this to me? Why am I being so persecuted in my life? Did we ever think that the decisions that we are making in our lives is causing us major issues? Whether it's with our neighbor, doing things that we shouldn't say or do, or being spiteful to someone when we don't have to be, just other meanness. These are all things that cause us major problems. That's why I'm so grateful that I'm in a congregation with good people. Loving people to try to help each other on a daily basis. We don't need to agree on everything in life. We all got our own way of living. We was raised differently. But our common goal in our life is to be Christians. And we will shine a light differently on folks out there. My own family told me I'm shining a light on them differently. And I'm very honored to have that. Makes me feel good. It truly does. And it's all because of individuals within this congregation that's done that. From the Winters, Terry, Harvey. We've said it 100 times. Being humble. I wish I had 1% of this man's humble. He's a good man. So I learned from him. I'm patient. The one gift that I asked God to give me when I retired. I said, Lord, please give me patience. It's something I really didn't have. You know what he done? I talked to Dad about this. He gave me him. It sounds fun. And it's nerve-wracking. And we get in arguments daily. And this has been going on for a while. And then I said it was the best gift that was ever given to me. Patience. You think something's just here it is? You got to learn it. The Lord knows the best way to give it to you. You just got to accept it. Acceptance. Let's go in Revelations, and Kyle, you talked about this 100 times. And it gets back into compromise. Before I get to Revelation, I personally think, and each one of us have these thoughts, I think it's the devil, to me, has got two major tools that he uses against me. It's a tactical diversion for my objective and compromise. Because he knows where my heart is. I mean, he's been doing this for what? 4,000 years? He's really got good at his game. If you figure we're on this earth about 80 years, 85, you're in overtime, right? He really ain't going to use a new game. He's just getting good at an old one. So, a tactical diversion is very simple. If my objective is to get through that door, he's going to throw out distractions. Because we're only here for a little while, right? Like a vapor, and then we're gone. So if he can keep me off my objective from getting in that door, to stay off my path, he's accomplished his mission. And then throw in a little compromise, and now I've abandoned everything that I know that he was right. That's why it is so, I can't do this by myself. I don't think any man on this earth can go to heaven on their own. We need each other. I can't do it. I don't know everything. Like Terry and Kyle and everybody has got up here and talked quiet. When I first got started, I was on the meal. I think maybe I'm on baby food right now. I've got a little hungry, and I'm reaching for something a little bit more substance. And that's how we're supposed to be. If you're really eager to be a Christian, you want more. You want to make sure that what you're doing is right. And if you don't, then you're compromising, I think. You're satisfied with where you're at in your life, and you think that the things that you're doing is okay. Even if somebody approaches you and says, hey, wait a minute. I'm good. And get back to Benny, your class. I listened to a great class, bro, talking about law. And then I tried to think out of the box on that. Do we not build walls around ourselves to protect ourselves? Personal walls? We think what we're doing is okay. We don't care. Say, hey, don't get in my space. I've got this. And the Lord just said, hey, take down those walls. Let me in. You don't need it. But, if I'm saying I got a back like a duck, folks, trust me. If I ain't right on something, somebody, please tell me right out. I'm good with it. I'm trying to put things in perspective so I may understand them better. Because there's a lot of parables in the Bible that, with things that were like, with idols, for instance. I ain't got no golden calf at the house. I ain't worried about that. It doesn't save me. And me and Terry was talking, what is an idol? What's it, anything that diverts our attention from the Lord and what we're supposed to do is an idol. Whether it's Sunday Super Bowl football games, we got to be at, and we say, well, we're just going to blow this off. So, that's an idol. Anything. Now, there's things that's going to come up. It's going to divert our attention away from God. I get it. We'll make it right. You know what's wrong and what's not wrong. I don't know everything in your life that's going on. But you personally, in your own soul and your own conscience, that's the point of all this. What is the definition of abandon? It's leaving something with an intent of never reclaiming or never coming back to. Well, that's harsh, ain't it? That's harsh. Jeremiah 3:17. Have you not done this to yourself by forsaking God at the time of leading the way? That's our path. So when we abandon God, why do we want to blame Him for our shortcomings and troubles? I'm a worst case scenario kind of person, always happy. And I sat there and thought, what's the worst case scenario that could happen? I go to hell. And then I'm standing in front of the Lord, and the Lord looks at me, and He says, "Depart me from me, Maxie Fannin, I've never known you." And then I say, "Well, what would I say?" I'd say, "Lord, did you show me where I went wrong?" And in my mind, I see a big screen. It goes back to a certain date and time. Right here. I said, "So was I in your book of life before then?" He said, "Absolutely. He was on your way. And then you chose to take a path of compromise. And you heard me in your ear telling you, Mikey, stop. Come back. You're on a bad path." And I kept walking. He said, "My voice got fainter and fainter and fainter until you totally abandoned me." Wouldn't that be an awful thought in itself? And you know that? That's very discouraging, to say the least. Then I started thinking about an Exodus. When the Israelites were leaving Egypt and Moses, when we talked about this, why in the world would these people not believe and have the faith in God after seeing all these miracles, from the plagues to the fire in the sky, from the clouds to stop the Egyptians from coming in, Red Sea getting parted, to no sickness? Clothes are not rotting, the shoes are not falling off, nobody's getting sick, all these blessings. Why would they not believe and have faith? I researched a little bit of it, and the only thing that I can come up with is they were institutionalized for 400 years. It's almost like having your dog inside the fence, and it's always wanting to get out, and then when it does, it sits there. They don't know what to do. They were so caught off guard, and God had so much patience with them, that it, once they abandoned the Lord and didn't follow His path, what happened? They wandered for 40 years. And it even got to the point that they got so bad with them that God just kept them all out for everybody that was over, what, 20 years old, Tom? They lost. They didn't finish the race. All over not having faith and abandoning God. I'll tell you a little story real quick, and this really opened my eyes to abandon. And Mackenzie, she was there. We went fishing on the New River back in the spring. She loves to fish. I love to. One of the prettiest places we've ever been. Through the course of the day, we started out together. And as we went further through the day, she got farther and farther ahead of me. I hollered at her, "But Mackenzie, you're getting too far ahead of me. I got this. I already know the path to get out." She goes, "I know where the path is. I'll get back to it." It got to the point she was having a hard time hearing me when I was calling her. I said, "Honey, if something happens, I ain't got enough time to get to you. I got this." I shoot up the side path. She gets stuck. At that point, she's screaming at me, "You have abandoned me." I can hear a woman screaming in my ears, "What have you done your whole life, son? I'm showing you the path. I'm telling you your path. I'm telling you and showing you the best path to get through this." So what did I do? The voice. She got closer to me and the voice got stronger. She starts telling me, now her path that she took her through a rough area. It's getting hard on her. But she made it to me. And I'm sitting there, is that not our life? Trying to get to heaven? We think we got this thing figured out. We got this, and then all of a sudden we get all mired up and scratched up by a path we've taken trying to get back on the right path. There's no, this path we're taking with Christianity and being good Christians, it is not easy. It will never be easy. But I guarantee you, the other road is impossible. It's just impossible. When I was at work, I tried to do everything that I could in an honorable and trustworthy manner. That way I would never be scrutinized for anything. Same thing with the military. I paid for it. You're going to pay for being an honorable person. You bring it up. Doing your spreadsheets and all this. We're not taking these bonuses no more. Me personally, it cost me promotions. It cost me my days off. This was turned into Monday and Tuesday for doing what was right. I didn't have a problem with it because my family supported what I'd done. And they meant more to me than anything that they'd done. So when the Lord asks us to do something, there'll be a price to pay, but it'll be worth it in the long run. We just got to stay on course and use each other. We're all in this boat together. And not one of us are any better than the other. We just work together, and when we have problems, we get through it. I guess the moral of this story is, be patient. Don't rush nothing. And if you have questions or concerns regarding your idols, ask somebody. Because if we can't learn from each other, we can't learn from nobody. And I've learned a lot from each and every one of you. And I love all of you. I truly do.